If then neither of us is calm, need we be? My hands reached for her, and then I heard someone whistling, and irritably I looked up to hear feet grating on the gravel path. It was Cannowell. "Better ride," he said. "I wouldn't put it past Park to drag gulch you, man."
"Cannowell,"
Olga protested. "How can you say that?" His slow eyes turned to her. "You think so too, ma'am. You always was an uncommon smart girl. You've known him for what he was for a mighty long time." He turned back to me. "Mean what you said back there? About peace and all?" "You bet I did. What can we gain by fighting?"
"You're right," Cannowell agreed. "But there'll be bloodshed before it's over. Pender won't quit.
He hates Rudd McLaren, and now he hates you. He won't back up or quit." Cannowell turned to Olga. "Let me talk to Sabre alone, will you? There's something he should know."
"All right," she gave me her hand. "Be careful, and good night."
We watched her walk back up the path, and when my eyes turned back to him, his were surprisingly soft. I could see his expression, even in the moonlight.
"Reminds me of her mother," he said quietly.
"You knew her?" I was surprised.
"She was my sister."
That was something I could never have guessed.
"She doesn't know," he explained. "Rudd and I used to ride together. I was too fast with a gun and killed a man with too many relatives. I left and Rudd married my sister. From time to time we rode. And when Rudd was having trouble with rustlers, I came out to lend a hand. He persuaded me to stay."
He looked around at me.
"One thing more. What did you mean about the Slades?"
So I told him in detail of my trip to Silver Reef, the killing of Lyell, and the conversation I'd overheard between Park and Booker. Where I had heard the conversation, I did not tell him, and only said there was some deal between the two of them that depended upon results to be obtained by Morgan Park. It was after midnight when I finally left the Bar M, turning off the main trail and cutting across country for the head of Gypsum Canyon. Mulvaney was waiting for me.
"Don't the horses walk," he explained,
nodding toward the hills. He added,
"Too quiet out there."
The night was clear, wide and peaceful. Later during the night I awakened with a start, the sound of a shot ringing in my ears. Mulvaney was sleeping soundly, so I did not disturb him. Afterward, all was quiet, so I dropped off to sleep once more. In the morning, I mentioned it to Mulvaney.
"Did you get up?" he asked.
"Yeah. I went out in the yard and listened, but heard nothing more. Could have been a hunter. Maybe one of the Benares boys." 2 hours later, I knew better. Riding past Maverick Spring, I saw the riderless horse grazing near a dark bundle that lay on the grass. The dark bundle was Rudd McLaren, and he was dead. He'd been shot twice from behind, both shots through the head. He was sprawled on his face, both hands above his head, one knee drawn up. Both guns were in their holsters, and his belt gun was tied down. After one look, I stood back and fired 3 shots as a signal to Mulvaney. When he saw McLaren, his face went white and he looked up.
"You shouldn't have done it, boy. The country hated him, but they respected him, too. They'll hang a man for this."
"Don't be foolish." I was irritated, but appalled, too. "I didn't do this. Feel of him. It must have been that shot I heard last night."
"He's cold, all right. This'll blow the lid off, Matt. You'd best rig a story for them, and it had better be good."
"No rigging. I'll tell the truth."
"They'll hang you, Matt. They'll never believe you didn't do it."
He waved a hand around.
"He's on your place. The two of you been feuding. They'll say you shot him in the back."
Standing over the body with the words of Mulvaney in my ears, I could see with piercing clarity the situation I was in. What could he have been doing here? Why would he come to my ranch in the middle of the night? I could see their accusing eyes when the death was reported, the shock to Olga, the reaction of the people, the accusations of Park. Somebody wanted McLaren dead enough to shoot him in the back. Who? Chapter 8. Strangely, the morning was cool, with a hint of rain. Mulvaney, at my request, had gone to the Bar M to tell Carnival of the killing, and it was up to Carnival to tell Olga. I did not like to think of that. My luck held in one sense, for Jolly Benares came riding up the wash, and I asked him to ride to Hatton's Point to report to Key Chapin. Covering the body with a tarp, I mounted and began to scout the area. How much time I had, I did not know, but it could not be much. Soon they would be arriving from Hatton's Point, and even sooner from the Bar M. One thing puzzled me. There had been but one shot fired, but there were two bullet holes in McLaren's skull. Carefully I examined the sand under the body and was struck by a curious thing. There was no blood. None on the sand, that is. There was plenty of blood on Rudd himself, but all of it, strangely enough, seemed to come from one bullet hole. There was a confusion of tracks where his horse had moved about while he lay there on the ground, but at this point the wash was sandy, and no definite track could be distinguished. Then horses' hoofs sounded, and I looked up to see five riders coming toward me. The nearest was Carnival, and beside him, Olga. The others were all Bar M riders, and from one glance at their faces I knew there was no doubt in their minds and little reason for speculation that I had killed Rudd McLaren. Carnival drew up, and his eyes pierced mine, cold, calculating, and shrewd. Olga threw herself from her horse and ran to the still form on the ground. She had refused to meet my eyes or to notice me. "This looks bad, Carnival. When did he leave the ranch?" He studied me carefully as if he were seeing me for the first time. "I don't know exactly," he said. "No one heard him go. He must have pulled out sometime after 2 this morning. The shot I heard was close to 4. "One shot?" "Only one, but he's been shot twice." Hesitating a little, I asked, "Who was with him when you last saw him?" "He was alone. If it's Morgan Park you're thinking of, forget it. He left right after you did. When I last saw Rudd, he was going to his room, feeling mighty sleepy." The Bar M riders were circling around. Their faces were cold, and they started an icy chill coming up my spine. These men were utterly loyal, utterly ruthless when aroused. The night before they had given me the benefit of the doubt, but now they saw no reason to think of any other solution but the obvious one. Tom Fox, a lean, hard-bitten Bar M man, was staring at me. Coolly he took a rope from his pommel. "What are we waiting for, men?" he asked bitterly. "There's our man." Turning, I said, "Fox, from what I hear, you're a good man and a good hand. Don't jump to any hasty conclusions. I didn't kill Rudd McLaren and had no reason to. We made peace talk last night and parted in good spirits." Fox looked up at Carnival. "That right?" Carnival hesitated, his expression unchanging. Then he spoke clearly. "It is. But Rudd McLaren changed his mind afterward." "Changed his mind?" That I couldn't believe. Yet, at the expression in Carnival's eyes, I knew he was speaking the truth. "Even so," I added, "how could I be expected to know that? When I left, all was friendly." "You couldn't know it," Carnival agreed, "unless he got out of bed and came to tell you. He might have done that, and I can think of no other reason for him to come here. He came to tell you, and you killed him when he started away." The hands growled, and Fox shook out a loop. It was Olga who stopped them. "No! Wait until the others arrive. If he killed my father, I want him to die. But wait until the others come." Reluctantly, Fox drew in his rope and coiled it. Sweat broke out on my forehead.
I could fight, and I would if it came to that. But these men only believed they were doing the right thing. They had no idea that I was innocent. My mouth was dry, and my hands felt cold. I tried to catch Olga's eye, but she ignored me. Cannibal seemed to be studying something, but he did not speak a word. The first one to arrive was Keith Chapin, and behind him a dozen other men. He looked at me a quick, worried glance, and then looked at Cannibal. Without waiting for questions, the foreman quickly repeated what had happened, telling of the entire evening, facts that could not, until then, have been known to the men. "There's one thing," I said suddenly, "that I want to call to your attention." They looked at me, but there was not a friendly eye in a lot of them. Looking around the circle of their faces, I felt a cold sinking in my stomach, and a feeling came over me. "Matt Saber," I was telling myself, "this is the end. You've come to it at last, and you'll hang for another man's crime." Not one friendly face, and Mulvaney had not returned with the Bar M Riders. There was no sign of Jolly Benares. "Chapin," I asked, "will you turn McLaren over?" The request puzzled them, and they looked from me to the covered body, then to Chapin. He swung down and walked across to the dead man. I heard Olga's breath catch, and then Chapin rolled McLaren on his back. He straightened up then, still puzzled. The others looked blankly at me. "The reason you're so quick to accuse me is that he is here on my ranch. Well, he was not killed here. There's no blood on the ground." Startled, they all looked. Before any comment could be made, I continued. "One of the wounds bled badly, and the front of his shirt is dark with blood. The sand would be, too, if he'd been killed here. What I'm saying is that he was killed elsewhere, then carried here."
"But why?" Chapin protested. Cannibal said, "You mean to throw guilt on you?"
"I sure do mean that. Also, that shot I heard fired was shot into him after he was dead."
Fox shook his head and sneered.
"How could you figure that?"
"A dead man does not bleed. Look at him. All the blood came from one wound."
Suddenly we heard more horsemen, and Mulvaney returned with his guns and the Benares boys. Not one, but all of them. Coolly they moved up to the edge of the circle.
"We'd be beholden," the elder Benares said loudly, "if you'd all move back. We're friends to Saber, and we don't believe he'd done it. Now give him air and listen."
They hesitated, not liking it, but their common sense told them that if trouble started now, it would be a bloody mess. Carefully, the nearest riders eased back. Whether Olga was listening, I had no idea. Yet it was she who I wanted most to convince. "There are other men with axes to grind beside the Penders and I said. "What had I to fear from Rudd? Already I'd shown I could take care of myself against all of them. Face to face, I was twice the man Rudd was."
"You tucked yourself up mighty well," Fox said.
"You had your chance in the canyon," I said brutally. "And when I say I can hold this ranch, you know I'm not lying."
Horses came up the trail, and the first faces I recognized were Bodie Miller and the redhead I'd whipped at the Two Bar. Bodie pushed his horse into the circle when he saw me. The devil was riding Bodie again, and I could see from Cannibal's face that he knew it. Right at the moment, Bodie was remembering how I had dared him to gamble at point-blank range.
"You, is it?" he said. "I'll kill you one day." "Keep out of this, Bodie," Cannibal ordered sharply.
Miller's dislike was naked in his eyes.
"Rudd's dead now," he said. "Maybe you won't be the boss anymore. Maybe she'll want a younger man for boss."
The import of his words was like a blow across the face. Suddenly I wanted to kill him. Suddenly I was going to. Cannibal's voice was a cool breath of air through my fevered brain.
"That will be for Miss Olga to decide."
He turned to her.
"Do you wish me to continue as foreman?"
"Naturally." Her voice was cold and even, and in that moment I was proud of her.
"And your first job will be to fire Bodie Miller."
Miller's face went white with fury, and his lips bared back from his teeth. Before he could speak, I interfered.
"Don't say it, Bodie. Don't say it."
I stepped forward to face him across McLaren's body. The malignancy of his expression was unbelievable.
"You and me are going to meet," he said, staring at me.
"When you're ready, Bodie." Deliberately not wanting the fight here, now, I turned my back on him. Chapin and Carnival joined me while the men loaded the body into a buckboard.
"We don't think you're guilty, Saber. Have you any ideas?"
"Only that I believe he was killed elsewhere and carried here to cast blame on me. I don't believe it was Pender. He would never shoot McLaren in the back."
"You think Park did it?"
Carnival demanded. "Peace between myself and McLaren would be the last thing he'd want," I said. Bob Benares was waiting for me.
"You can use Jonathan and Jolly," he said. "I ain't got work enough to keep him out of mischief."
He was not fooling me in the least. "Thanks. I can use them to spell Mulvaney on lookout, and there's plenty of work to do." For 2 weeks we worked hard, and the inquest of Rudd McLaren turned up nothing new. There'd been no will, so the ranch went to Olga. Yet nothing was settled. Some people believed I had killed McLaren. Most of them did not know, but the country was quiet. Of Bodie Miller we heard much. He killed a man at Hatton's Point in a saloon quarrel, shot him before he could get his hand on a gun. Bodie and Red were riding with a lot of riffraff from Height. The Bar M was missing cattle, and Bodie laughed when he heard it. He pistol-whipped a man in Silver Reef and wounded a man while driving off the posse that came after him. I worried more about Morgan Park. I had to discover just what his plan was. My only chance was to follow Park every hour of the day and night. I must know where he went, what he was doing, with whom he was talking. One night I waited on a hill above Hatton's Point, watching the house where he lived when in town. When he came out of the house, I could feel the hackles rising on the back of my neck. There was something about him that would always stir me to fury, and it did now. Stifling it, I watched him go to Mother O'Hara's, watched him mount up and ride out of town on the Bar M Road. Yet scarcely a dozen miles from town, he drew up and scanned his back trail. Safely under cover, I watched him. Apparently satisfied with what he did not see, he turned right along the ridge, keeping under cover. He now took a course that led him into the wildest and most remote corner of the Bar M, that neck of land north of my own and extending far west. His trail led him out upon Dark Canyon Plateau. Knowing little of this area, I closed the distance between us until I saw him making camp. Before daylight, he was moving again. The sun rose and the day became hot, with a film of heat haze obscuring all the horizons. He seemed headed toward the northwest, where the long line of the Sweet Alice Hills ended the visible world. This country was a maze of canyons. To the south it fell away in an almost sheer precipice for hundreds of feet to the bottom of Dark Canyon. There were trails off the plateau, but I knew none of them. The view was breathtaking, overlooking miles of columned and whorled sandstone, towering escarpments, minarets, and upended ledges. This had once been inhabited country, for there were ruins of cliff dwellings about, and Indian writings. The trail divided at the east end of the plateau, and the flat rock gave no indication of which Park had taken. It looked as though I had lost him. Taking a chance, I went down a steep slide into Poison Canyon and worked back in the direction he must have taken. But the only tracks were of rodents and one of a bighorn sheep. Hearing a sound of singing, I dismounted. Rifle in hand, I worked my way through the rocks and the brush.
"No use to shave," the man at the fire said.
We're stuck here. No chance to get to Hatton's Point now.
Yeah, the shaver scoffed. You see that big feller? Him and Slade are talking medicine. We'll move out soon. I don't want to get caught with no beard when I go to town. Who'll care how you look? And maybe the fewer who know how you look, the better. After this show busts open, the shaver replied, it ain't going to matter who knows me. We'll have that town sewed up tighter than a drum.
Maybe.
The cook straightened and rubbed his back.
Again, maybe not. I wish it was rustling cows. Taking towns can be mighty mean. It ain't a town, just a couple of ranches. Only 3-4 men on the 2-bar, and about the same on the bar M. Slade will have the toughest job done afore we start. That big feller looks man enough to do it by himself. But if he can pay, his money'll look good to me. He better watch his step. That Saber ain't no chicken with a pair of colts. He downed Raleigh Pender, and I figure it was him done for Lyell over to the reef. It'll be something when he and Bodie get together, both faster'n grease lightning. Saber won't be around. Pender figures on raiding that spread today. Sam wouldn't help him because he'd promised Park. Pender'll hit him about sundown, and that'll be the end of Saber.
Waiting no longer, I hurried back to my horse. If Pender was to attack the 2-bar, Park would have to wait. Glancing at the sun, fear rose in my throat. It would be nip and tuck if I was to get back. Another idea came to me. I would rely on Mulvaney and the Benares boys to protect the 2-bar. I would counterattack and hit the CP. When I reached the CP, it lay deserted and still but for the cook, bald-headed and big-bellied. He rushed from the door, but I was on him too fast, and he dropped his rifle under the threat of my 6-gun. Tying him up, I dropped him in a feed bin and went to the house. Finding a can of wagon grease, I smeared it thickly over the floor in front of both doors, and more of it on the steps. Leaving the door partly open, I dumped red pepper into a pan and balanced it above the door where the slightest push would send it cascading over whoever entered, filling the air with fine grains. Opening the corral, I turned the horses loose and started them down the valley. Digging out all the coffee on the place, I packed it to take away, knowing how a cowhand dearly loves his coffee. It was my idea to make their lives as miserable as possible, to get them thoroughly fed up with the fight. Pender would not abandon the fight, but his hands might get sick of the discomfort. Gathering a few sticks, I added them to the fire already laid, but under them I put a half dozen shotgun shells. In a tool shed were 6 sticks of powder and some fuse left from blasting rocks. Digging out a crack at one corner of the fireplace, I put 2 sticks of dynamite into the crack, then ran the fuse within 2 inches of the fire and covered it with ashes. The shotgun shells would explode and scatter the fire, igniting, I hoped, the fuse. A slow hour passed after I returned to a hideout in the brush. What was happening at the 2-bar? In any kind of fight, one has to have confidence in those fighting with him, and I had it in the man I'd left behind me. If one of them was killed, I vowed never to stop until all this crowd were finished. Sweat trickled down my face. It was hot under the brush. Once a rattler crawled by within 6 or 7 feet of me. A pack rat stared at me, then moved on. Crows quarreled in the trees over my head, and then I saw the riders. One look told me, whatever had happened at the 2-bar, I knew these men were not victorious. There were 9 in the group, and 2 were bandaged. One had his arm in a sling, one had his skull bound up. Another man was tied over a saddle, head and heels hanging. They rode down the hill, and I lifted my rifle, waiting for them to get closer to the ranch. Then I fired 3 times as rapidly as I could squeeze off the shots. One horse sprang into the air, spun halfway around, scattering the group, then fell, sending his rider sprawling. The others rushed for the shelter of the buildings, but just as they reached them, one man toppled from his horse, hit the dirt like a sack of old clothes, and rolled over in the dust. He staggered to his feet and rushed toward the barn, fell again, then got up and ran on. Others made a break for the house, and the first one to hit those greasy steps was Jim Pender. He hit them running, his feet flew out from under him, and he hit the step on his chin. With a yell, the others charged by him, and even in that distance, I could hear the crash of their falling, their angry shouts, and then the roaring sneezes and gasping yells as the red pepper filled the air and bit into their nostrils. Coolly, I proceeded to shoot out the windows, to knock the hinges off the door, and when Jim Pender staggered to his feet and reached for his hat, I put a bullet through the hat. He jumped as if stung and grabbed for his pistol. He swung it up, and I fired again as he did. What happened to his shot I never knew, but he dropped the pistol with a yell and plunged for the door. One man had ducked for the heavily planked water trough, and now he fired at me. Invisible from my position, I knew that he was somewhere under the trough, and so I drilled the trough with two quick shots, draining the water down upon him. He jumped to escape, and I put bullets into the dust to the left and right of his position. Like it or not, he had to lie there while all the water ran over him. A few scattered shots stampeded their horses, and then I settled down to wait for time to bring the real fireworks. A few shots came my way after a while, but all were high or low, and none came close to me. Taking my time, I loaded up for the second time and then rolled a smoke. My buckskin was in a low place and had cover from the shots. There was no way they could escape from the house to approach me. One wounded man had fallen near the barn, and I let him get up and limp toward it. Every once in a while, somebody would fall inside the house, and in the clear air I could hear the sound, and each time I couldn't help but grin. There was smashing and banging inside the house, and I could imagine what was happening. They were looking for coffee and not finding it. A few minutes later, a slow trickle of smoke came out the chimney. My head resting on the palm of one hand, I took a deep drag on my cigarette and waited happily for the explosions. They came, and suddenly, there was a sharp bark of a shotgun shell exploding, then a series of bangs as the others went off. Two men rushed from the door and charged for the barn. Bullets into the dust hurried them to shelter, and I laid back and laughed heartily. I'd never felt so good in my life, picturing the faces of those tired, disgruntled men, besieged in the cabin, unable to make coffee, sliding on a greasy floor, sneezing from the red pepper, ducking shotgun shells from the fire. Not 5 minutes had passed when the powder went off with terrific concussion. I had planted it better than I knew, for it not only cracked the fireplace, but blew a hole in it from which smoke gulped and trickled slowly. Rising, I drifted back to my horse and headed for the ranch. Without doubt, the CP outfit was beginning to learn what war meant, and furthermore, I knew my methods were far more exasperating to the cowhands than out-and-out fight. Your true cowhand savors a good scrap, but he does not like discomfort or annoyance, and I knew that going without water, without good food, and without coffee would do more to end the fight than anything else. All the same, as I headed to Gelding back toward the two bar, I knew that, if any of my own boys had been killed, I would retaliate in kind. There could be no other answer. Mulvaney greeted me at the door.
"Sure, Matt. You missed a good scrap. We give them lads the fight of their lives."
Jolly and Jonathan looked up at me, Jolly grinning, the more serious Jonathan smiling faintly. Jolly showed me a bullet burn on his arm, the only scratch any of them had suffered. They had been watching, taking turn about, determined they would not be caught asleep while I was gone. The result was that they sighted the CP riders when they were still miles from the headquarters of the two bar. The Benares boys began it with a skirmisher's battle, firing from rocks and brush in a continual running fight. A half dozen times they drove the CP riders to shelter, killing two horses and wounding a man. They had retreated steadily until in position to be covered by Mulvaney, who was ready with all the spare arms loaded. From the bunkhouse they stood off the attack. They had so many loaded weapons that there was no break in their fire until the CP retreated.
"Somebody didn't want to fight," Jolly explained. "We seen them arguifying, and then finally somebody else joined in, and they backed out on Pender. He was almighty sore, believe you me."
Amid much laughter, I told him about my own attack on the CP. Mulvaney ended it suddenly.
"Hey," he turned swiftly, "I forgot to tell yer. That catamount of a Bodie Miller done shot Cannaval."
"Is he dead?"
"Not the last we heard, but he's hurt mighty bad. He took 4 bullets before he went down."
"Miller?"
"Never a scratch. That kid's plumb poison, I tell you. Poison."
Chapter 9. For a minute I considered that and liked none of it. Cannaval had been a man with whom I could reason. More than that, with Cannaval at hand, there had always been protection for Olga. There was no time to be wasted now. Telling Mulvaney of what I had seen in the canyon, I turned my buckskin toward the Bar M. I wanted, first of all, to talk with Olga, and second, to see Cannaval. If the man was alive, I had to talk to him. The gun star of Bodie Miller was rising now, and I knew how he would react. This new shooting would only serve to convince him of his speed. The confidence he had lacked on our first meeting, he would now have. He would not wait long to kill again, and he would seek out some known gunfighter, for his reputation could only grow now by killing the good ones, and Cannaval had been one of the fastest around. And who would that mean? Jim Pender, Morgan Park, or myself? And knowing how he felt about me, I had an idea who he would be seeking out. Key Chapin was standing on the wide veranda of the Bar M house when I rode into the yard. Fox was loitering nearby, and he started toward me.
"You ain't wanted here, Saber," he told me brusquely. "Get off the place."
"Don't be a fool, man. I've come on business." He shook his head stubbornly.
"Don't make no difference. Start moving and don't reach for a gun. You're covered from the bunkhouse and the barn."
"Fox," I persisted, "I've no row with you, and you're the last man in the world I'd like to kill, but I don't like being pushed, and you're pushing me. I've got Bodie Miller and Morgan Park to take care of, as well as Jim Pender, so get this straight. If you want to die, grab iron. Don't ride me, Fox, because I won't take it." My buckskin started, and Fox, his face a study in conflicting emotion, hesitated. Then a cool voice interposed.
"Fox, step back. Let the gentleman come up."
It was Olga McLaren. Fox hesitated, then stepped back, and I drew up the buckskin for a minute. Fox looked at me, and our eyes met. "I'm glad of that, Fox," I said. "I'd hate to have killed a man as good as you. They don't come often." The sincerity in my voice must have reached him, for when I happened to glance back, he was staring after me, his face puzzled. As I dismounted, Chapin walked over toward the house. Olga stood on the steps awaiting me. There was no welcome in her eyes. Her face was cool, composed.
"There was something you wanted?"
"Is that my only welcome?"
"What reason have you to expect anything more?"
That made me shrug. "None," I said. "None at all. How's Cannaval?"
"Resting."
"Is he better? Is he conscious?"
"Yes to both questions."
"Can he see anybody?"
"No."
Then I heard him speak.
"Saber, is that you? Come in."
Olga hesitated, and for a minute I believed she was going to defy the request, Then, with a shrug of indifference, he led Chapin and me into the wounded man's room. The foreman's appearance shocked me. He was drawn and thin, his eyes huge and hollow in the deathly pallor of his face. His hand gripped mine, and he stared up at me.
"Glad you're here, Saber,"
he said abruptly.
"Watch that little demon. Oh, he's a fast man. He's blinding. He had a bullet into me before my gun cleared. He's a freak, Saber."
"Sure," I agreed. "But that isn't what I came about. I came to tell you again, I had nothing to do with killing Rudd McLaren." He nodded slightly.
"I'm sure of it."
I could feel Olga behind me.
"I found tracks." "Not yours. Horse tracks and tracks of a man carrying a heavy burden. Small feet."
Chapin interrupted suddenly.
"Saber, I've a message for you. I picked it up in Silver Reef yesterday."
He handed me a telegram, still sealed. Ripping it open, I saw there what I had expected. "My brother, unheard of in many months. Morgan Park answers description of Park Cantwell. Wanted for murder and embezzlement of regimental funds. Coming west. Leo Darcy, Colonel, 12th Cavalry." Without comment, I handed the message back to Chapin, who read it aloud. Olga grew pale, but she said nothing.
"Know anything about the case?"
Carnival asked Chapin. The editor nodded.
"Yes, I do. It was quite an exciting case at the time. Park Cantwell was a captain in the cavalry. He embezzled some $20,000, then murdered his commanding officer when faced with it. He got away, was recaptured, and then broke jail and killed two men in the process. He was last heard of in Mexico."
"Not much chance of a mistake, is there?"
"None," Chapin said, "or very slight. Not many men are so big, and he is a striking character. Out west here, he probably believed he would not be discovered. Most of his time he spent on that lonely ranch of his, and he rarely was around town until lately. Apparently, if this is true, he hoped to realize enough money out of the deal of his with Jake Booker to retire in Mexico or elsewhere. Probably in this remote corner of the West, he believed he might never be recognized."
"And now?" Olga asked. "What will happen?"
Chapin shrugged.
"I'll take this message to Sheriff Will Thorpe, and then we'll wait for Darcy to arrive."
"There's not much else we can do," I agreed.
"What is it Park and Booker want?" Chapin wondered. "I don't grasp their motive."
"Who does?" I shrugged. Olga had not looked at me. Several times I tried to catch her eyes, but she avoided my glance. Her face was quiet, composed, and she was, as always, perfectly poised. Not by so much as a flicker of an eyelash did she betray her feelings toward me, but I found no comfort in that. Whether or not she believed I had killed her father, she obviously wanted no part of me. Discouraged, I turned toward the door.
"Where to now?"
Carnival asked. "Why?" I turned around. "I'm heading for town to see Morgan Park. No man ever beat me with his fists yet and walked away scot-free. I'll have the hide off that brute, and now is as good a time as any."
"Leave him alone, Saber."
Cannavale tried to sit up.
"I've seen him kill a man with his fists."
"He won't kill me."
"What is this?"
Olga turned, her eyes blazing.
"A cheap childish desire for revenge? Or are you talking just to make noise? It seems all I've heard you do since you came here is to talk. You've no right to go in there and start trouble. You've no right to fight Morgan Park simply because he beat you. Leave him alone."
"Protecting him?" My voice was not pleasant. Did she, I wondered, actually love the man? The idea did not appeal to me, and the more it stayed in my mind, the more angry I became.
"No," she flared. "I'm not protecting him.
From what I saw of you after that first fight, I don't believe it is he who needs the protection."
She could have said nothing more likely to bring all my own temper to the surface. So when she spoke, I listened, my face stiffening. Then, without another word, I turned and walked from the room. I went down the steps to my horse and into the saddle. The buckskin leaned into the wind and kept the fast pace I set for him. Despite my fury, I kept my eyes open and on the hills. Right then I would have welcomed a fight, and any kind of a fight. I was mad all the way through, burning with it. And perhaps it was lucky that right then I should round a bend of the trail and come into the midst of Jack Slade and his men. They had not heard me until I rounded the bend, and they were heading the same way I was, toward town. The sudden sound of horses' hoofs turned their heads, and Slade dove for his gun. He was too late. Mad clear through, the instant I saw them, I slammed the spurs into my startled buckskin. The horse gave a lunge, driving between the last two riders and striking Slade's horse with his shoulder. At the same instant, I lashed out with a barrel of my Colt and laid it above the ear of the nearest rider. He went off his horse as if struck by lightning, and I swung around, blasting a shot from my belt that knocked the gun from the hand of another rider. Slade was fighting his maddened horse, and I leaned over and hit it a crack with my hat. The horse gave a tremendous leap and started to run like a scared rabbit, with Slade fighting to stay in the saddle. He had lost one stirrup when my horse lunged into his and had not recovered it. The last I saw of him was his running horse in a cloud of dust. It all happened in a split second, and one man had a smashed hand. One was knocked out, and Slade was fighting his horse. The fourth man had been maneuvering for a shot at me, but among the plunging horses he was afraid of hitting his own friends. Wheeling my horse, I fired as he did, and both of us missed. He tried to steady his horse and swung. Buck did not like it and was fighting to get away. I let him go, taking a backward shot at the man in the saddle, a shot that must have clipped his ear, for he ducked like a bee-stung farmer. And then Buck was laying him down on the trail to town. Feeding shells into my gun, I let him run. I felt better for the action and was ready for anything. The town loomed up, and I rode in and swung down in front of Mother O'Hara's. Buck's side looked bad, for the spurs had bit deep, and I'm a man who rarely touches a spur to a horse. After greasing the wounds and talking Buck into friendship again, I went inside. There was nobody around, but Katie O'Hara came out of her kitchen. One look at me, and she could see I was spoiling for trouble. "Morgan Park in town?" She did not hesitate.
"He is that. A moment ago I heard he was in the saloon."
Morgan Park was there, all right. He was sitting at a table with Jake Booker, and they both looked up when I entered. I didn't waste any time. I walked up to them. "Booker," I said, "I've heard you're a no-account shyster, a sheep-stealing small-town shyster at that. But you're doing business with a thief and a murderer, and a man I'm going to whip." With that, I grabbed the table and hurled it out of the way, and then I slapped Morgan Park across the mouth with my hat. Morgan Park came off his chair with a roar. He lunged and came up fast, and I smashed him in the teeth with a left. His lips flattened and blood showered from his mouth. And then I threw a right that caught him flush on the chin, and I threw it hard. He blinked, but he never stopped coming. And he rushed me, swinging with both of those huge iron-like fists. One of them rang bells on my skull, and the other dug for my midsection with a blow I partially blocked with an elbow. Then I turned with his arm over my shoulder, and I threw him bodily across the floor against the bar rail. He came up fast, and I nailed him with another left. Then he caught me with both hands, and sparks danced among the stars in my skull. That old smoky taste came up inside of me, and a taste of blood in my mouth, and I walked in smashing with both hands. Something busted on his face, and his brow was cut to the bone, and the blood was running all over him. There was a crowd around, and they were yelling, but I heard no sound. I walked in, bobbing and weaving to miss as many of those jarring, brutal blows as possible. But they kept landing and battering me. He knocked me back into the bar and then grabbed a bottle. He took a terrific cut at my skull, and I ducked, smashing him in the ribs. He staggered and sprawled out of balance from the force of his missed swing, and I rushed him and took a flying leap at his shoulders. I landed astride and jammed both spurs into his thighs, and he let out a roar of agony. I went over his head, lighting on all fours, and he sprang atop my back. I flattened out on the floor with the feeling that he had me. He was yelling like a madman, and he grabbed my hair and began to beat my head against the floor. How I did it, I'll never know, but I bowed my back under his weight and forced myself to my hands and knees. He ripped at me with his own spurs, and then I got his leg and threw him off. Coming up together, we circled, more wary now. His shirt was in ribbons, and he was covered with blood. I'd never seen Morgan stripped before. He had a chest and shoulders like a Hercules. He circled and then came into me, snarling. I nailed that snarl into his teeth with both fists, and we stood there swinging them freely with both hands, rocking with the power of those punches and smelling of sweat, blood, and fury. He backed up, and I went into him. Suddenly he caught my upper arms, and dropping, put a foot in my stomach and threw me over his head. For a fleeting instant I was flying through the air, and then I lit on a poker table and grabbed the sides with both hands. It went over on top of me, and that was all that saved me. As he rushed in to finish me with the boots, I shoved the table at him and came up off the floor, and he hit me again, and I went right back down. He dropped a big palm on my head and shoved me at the floor. I sprawled out, and he kicked me in the side. It missed my ribs and glanced off my gun belt, and I rolled over and grabbed his boot, twisting hard. It threw him off balance, and he hit the floor, which gave me the chance to get on my feet. I got him just as he was halfway up with a right that knocked him through the door and out onto the porch. I hit the porch in a jump, and he tackled me around the knees. We both were down then, and I slapped him with a cupped hand over his ear, and knew from the way he let go that I'd busted an eardrum for him. I dropped him again with a solid right to the chin, and stood back, gasping and pain-racked, fighting for breath. He got up more slowly, and I nailed him, left and right in the mouth, and he went down heavily. Sprawled out, he lay there on the edge of the walk, one hand trailing in the dust, and I stared down at him. He was finished, through. Turning on my heels, I walked back inside, and brushing off those who crowded around me, I headed for the bar. I took the glass of whiskey that was shoved at me and poured it in my hands and mopped the cuts on the lower part of my face with it. Then I took a quick gulp from the glass that was again put before me and turned. Morgan Park was standing 3 feet away from me, a bloody, battered giant with cold, ugly fury blazing from his eyes. "Give me a drink," he bellowed. He picked up the glass and tossed it off. "Another!" he yelled while I stared at him. He picked that up, lifted it to his lips, then threw it in my eyes. I must have blinked, for instead of getting the shot glass full, I got only part of it, but enough to blind me. And then he stepped close. As I fought for sight, I caught a glimpse of his boot toes wide spread, and I was amazed that such a big man had such small feet. Then he hit me. It felt like a blow from an axe, and it knocked me into the bar. He faced around, taking his time, and he smashed one into my body, and I went down, gasping for breath. He kicked at me with the toe of one of those deadly boots that could have put an eye out, but the kick glanced off the side of my head. It was my turn to be down and out. Then somebody drenched me with a bucket of water, and I looked up. Keith Chapin was standing over me, but it was not Keith Chapin who had thrown the water. It was Olga. Right then, I was only amazed that she was there at all, and then I got up shakily, and somebody said, "There he is!" And I saw Park standing there with his hands on his hips, leering at me, and with the same mutual hatred, we went for each other again. How we did it, I don't know, Both of us had taken beatings that would have killed a horse. All I knew was that time for me had stopped. Only one thing remained. I had to whip that man. Whip him or kill him with my bare hands. And I was not stopping until I was sure I had done it.
"Stop it, you crazy fools! Stop it or I'll throw you both in jail!"
Sheriff Will Tharp was standing in the door with a gun on me. His cold blue eyes were blazing. Behind him were maybe 20 men staring at us. One of them was Keith Chapin. Another was Bodie Miller. "Take him out of here, then," I said. "If he wants more of this, he can have it in the morning." Park backed toward the door, then turned away. He looked punch drunk. After that, I sat up for an hour, putting hot water on my face. Then I went to the livery stable and crawled into the loft, taking a blanket with me. I had worn my guns and had my rifle along. How long I slept, I have no idea, except that, when I awakened, bright sunlight was streaming through the cracks in the walls of the old stable. And the loft was like an oven with the heat. Sitting up, I touched my face. It was sore all right, but felt better. I worked my fingers to loosen them up, and then heard a movement and looked around. Morgan Park was on the ladder, staring at me, and I knew then that I was not looking at a sane man. Chapter 10. He stood there on the ladder in that hot old barn, staring at me with hatred and a fury that seemed no whit abated from the previous night. "You back again?" I spoke quietly, yet lay poised for instant movement. I knew now the tremendous vitality that huge body held. "After the way I licked you last night?" The veins distended in his brow and throat. "Whipped me?" His voice was hoarse with anger. "Why, you?" He started over the end of the ladder, and I let him come. Right then I could have cooled him, knocked him off that ladder, but something within me wouldn't allow it. With a lesser man, one I could have whipped easily, I might have done it just to end the fighting, but not with Morgan Park. Right then I knew I had to whip him fairly, or I could never be quite comfortable again. He straightened from the ladder, and I could see that he was a little stiff. Well, so was I. But my boxing with Mulvaney and the riding I had done had been keeping me in trim. My condition was better than his, almost enough to equalize his greater size and strength. He straightened and turned toward me. He did not rush, just stood there studying me with cool calculation. And I knew that he, too, had come here to make an end to this fight and to me. Right then he was studying how best to whip me. And suddenly I perceived his advantage. In the loft, one side open to the barn, the rest of it stacked with hay, I was distinctly at a disadvantage. Here his weight and strength could be decisive. He moved toward me, backing me toward the hay. I fainted, but he did not strike. He merely moved on in, his head hunched behind a big shoulder, his fists before him moving slightly. Then he lunged. My back came up against the slanting wall of hay, and my feet slipped. Off balance, lying against the hay, I had no power in my blows. With cold brutality, he began to swing. His eyes were exultant and wicked with sadistic delight. Lights exploded in my brain, and then another punch hit me, and another. My head spinning, my mouth tasting of smoke, I let myself slide to a sitting position, then threw my weight sidewise against his knees. He staggered and, fearing the fall off the edge of the loft, fought for balance. Instantly I smashed him in the mouth. He went to his haunches, and I sprang past him, grabbed a rope that hung from the rafters, and dropped to the hard-packed earth of the barn's floor. He turned and glared at me, and I waited. A man appeared in the door, and I heard him yell, "They're at it again!" And then Morgan Park clambered down the ladder and turned to me. Now it had to be ended. Moving in quickly, I jabbed a stiff left to his face. The punch landed on his lacerated mouth and started the blood. Circling carefully, I slipped a right and countered with a right to the ribs. Then I hit him fast and rolling my shoulders with a left and right to the face. He came in, but I slipped another punch, an uppercut hard to the wind. That slowed him down. He hit me with a glancing left and took two punches in return. He looked sick now, and I moved in, smashing him on the chin with both hands. He backed up, bewildered, and I knocked his left aside and hit him on the chin. He went to his knees, and I stepped back and let him get up. Behind me there was a crowd, and I knew it. Waiting, I let him get up. He wiped off his hands, then lunged at me, head down and swinging. Sidestepping swiftly, I evaded the rush, and when he tried it again, I dropped my palm to the top of his head and spun him. At the same instant, I uppercut with a wicked right that straightened him up. He turned toward me, and then I pulled the trigger on a high, hard one. It struck his chin with a solid thud of the butt end of an axe, striking a log. He fell, not over backwards, but face down. He lay there still and quiet, unmoving, out cold. Sodden with weariness and fed up with fighting for once, I turned away from him and picked up my hat and rifle. Nobody said anything, staring at my battered face and torn clothing. Then they walked to him. At the door, I met Sheriff Tharp. He glared at me. "Didn't I tell you to stop fighting in this town, Saber? What am I going to do? Let him beat my head off? I came here to sleep without interruption, and he followed me. Found me this morning." Jerking my head toward the barn's interior, I told him, "You'll find him in there, Tharp." He hesitated. "Better have some rest, Saber. Then ride out of town for a few days. After all, I have to have peace. I'm arresting Park. Not for fighting. For murder. This morning I received an official communication confirming your message." Actually, I was sorry for him. No man ever hates a man he has whipped in a hand-to-hand fight. All I wanted now was sleep, food, and gallons of cold spring water. Right then I felt as if it had been weeks since I'd had a decent drink. Yet all the way to O'Hara's I kept remembering that bucket of water doused over me the night before. Had it really been Olga McLaren there? Or had I been out of my head from the punches I'd taken? When my face was washed off, I came into the restaurant, and the first person I saw was Keith Chapin. He looked at my face and shook his head. "I'd never believe anything human could fight the way you two did," he exclaimed. "And again this morning. I hear you whipped him good this time." "Yeah. I was tired of it all." Somberly, I ate breakfast, listening to the drone of voices in my ears.
"Booker's still in town," Chapin was speaking. "What's he after, I wonder?"
Right then I did not care, but as I ate and drank coffee, my mind began to function once more. After all, this was my country. I belonged here. For the first time, I really felt that I belonged someplace.
"Am I crazy, or was Olga here last night?" "She was here all right. She saw part of your fight."
"Did she leave?"
"I think not. I believe she's staying over at Doc and Mrs. West's place. They're old friends of hers."
Chapin knocked out his pipe.
"As a matter of fact, you'd better go over there and have him look at those cuts. One of them at least needs some stitches."
"Tharp arrested Park."
"Yes, I know. Park is Cantwell, all right."
Out in the air, I felt better, with food and some strong black coffee inside of me. I felt like a new man, and the mountain air was fresh and good to the taste. Turning, I started up the street, walking slowly. This was Hatton's Point. This was my town. Here in this place I would remain. I would ranch here, graze my cattle, rear my sons to manhood. Here I could take my place in the world and be something more than the careless, cheerful, trouble-hunting rider. Here in this place, I belonged. Doc West lived in a small white cottage surrounded by rose bushes and shrouded in vines. Several tall poplars reached toward the sky, and there was a small patch of lawn inside the white picket fence. He answered the door at my rap, a tall, austere-looking